Wow, there are a lot of people here. I didn't even see this side of the room. Okay, can everybody hear me? Is this all right? Well, thank you all for coming, and thanks to the Hemingway's crew for putting this together, like you do for so you've done for so many years. I don't think it was this particular reading, but the first time I read here was in I was in college, and I'm almost, I'm going to give a date. I'm going to give an approximate date. I want to say like 1995 or 6. So Hemingway's and I go way back too. Okay. All right. Well, then it was you. Okay. I might have some fun goofball poems in here. I don't know. We'll see. But I'm gonna start with a poem for my friend Michael Worster called Freelance Editor. The old master told his class that when I was young, I would sneak out the window down the side of my parents' house with bed sheets tied together. He did teach me back then, but I wasn't creative enough for any exit except the door. We both knew he made up the story, but I still believe he thought it was true. I'm not protecting the old master's fantasy. I prefer his version of my life, most of which he's left untold. He visits my third floor walk-up with a stack of manuscript pages. I sit across the table and sip tea, wondering what he thinks of my carpeted kitchen, my ridiculous divorce. Without comment, he writes a check. So Michael Worster probably saw that coming because I've read that poem a bunch of times, just like I've read many of my poems a bunch of times, just as tends to happen, I suppose. But so I wanted to really take care to throw some new ones in here because I think that will be more fun for everybody, but especially me. So here is a newer one that I'm still working on, and I'm going to take this opportunity to put in a little plug for Pittsburgh Poetry Exchange. If you haven't heard of them, they've been a Pittsburgh institution for around, like, well, I definitely more than 40 years. And they have a workshop every first Monday of the month, except not this coming month because that's 4th of July. So, so that's going to be a little different. But typically, first Monday of every month out at the Brentwood Library, and I've workshopped a lot of poems there over the years, and I always get some helpful advice. So here's one that I think I may have passed through that workshop once or twice. Childish thinking. When you badmouth the world and human beings, I sigh and nod like I'm wise instead of blessed, skip defending a sunset or soap bubbles floating across the park. My agreement is not fake, yet always stings, as if someone dissed my hometown team, as if I care about sports. I might be a monster for tolerating heinous imperfections that have yet spared me and fed my gratitude for bright workday commutes, ducks grazing the edge of the river. Even the humans I enjoy most are not who I thought, including us both. Like a child of quarreling parents, I eat all blame since this is my dream. When strangers dance in the street and hug, I don't know what they're celebrating, but it seems like a good night to be alive. Hansel and Gretel in space. Rations of freeze-dried pumpernickel, then into the hammocks where father buckled them snug and began a tale of the good prince and princess who had no adventures and plenty to eat. They awoke adrift, bumping the walls of an escape pod. Hansel called out, knowing his parents would not answer. 3 days of fuel, their best toys and games, no bread. No hydroponics, of course. Mother and father have cloaked the ship, Gretel said from the instrument grid. You can't know that, not for sure, Hansel flung himself across the small cabin. Outside, space crackled like freezing fire. They sucked smooth stones gathered on planets in happier times, floated mostly, slept shifts in the foam-lined pilot seat. In the end, they watched sensor readings tickering by. They held hands, sat still. On screen, a planet, a distant dot. In silence, they laid a course using all the fuel. A new light filled their pod. Soon, the children could see brown and white and coral bands, and as they drew close, the flawed red eye. Once more, Gretel reached for Hansel's hand. "You take the chocolate and butterscotch parts," she said. "I want the icing and cherry." Hansel smiled. "Sister, we will have plenty to share." Thanks. Now, this one is a newer one, and I guess it is not technically a sequel, since in my mind they're both dead after the end of that poem, but it's sort of a sequel because I wrote it after. It's a sequel in a different universe, let's just say that. Hansel and Gretel part ways. After the oven, the peppery stench and green smoke searing their lungs, they flee. But in the small clearing, she grabs her brother's arm. "Wait, the house!" So they drench the witch's corpse, bloating walls where water splashed bread, and they stay, rationing door frames and trim, until Gretel, watching birds peck among tree roots, says, "We must learn to hunt." And Hansel sets down his pail. "We should find Papa before it's too cold." Having seen cocoons big as women deep in branches, Gretel cannot unsee them, or footprints smaller than hers, or the chimney glimpsed and skirted a whiff of shortbread. So she breaks the promise she'd whispered each night into Hansel's cage. So now she tells him, "They don't want us," but he shakes his head, and in the morning has left, taking his pack and a modest piece of the floor, and Gretel never finds him, not a sign or a shoe. Though each fall she searches, lengthening her pebble trail to the leaning sugar house she patches with wood and mud. After the folly. You bristled when I saw this coming. Could be true I fashioned our downfall by fearing it. Your shape lay behind the veil I wished to push aside. I had to touch and find you cold. But I did not fail in that I found you. The way I carried you like a dead twin, the weight of your head, the bones in your fingers, and the map etched in their skin. Those I gained for a few years while it dawned on us that we could not converse the way you prayed to God. The same way I hope some being knows everything and still loves me, except I don't believe it. How you hated the questions I asked. Now when I dream of you, we are next door neighbors waving from porches, and sometimes on the other side of a wall, I hear running water, a thump, a laugh track. So here I'm gonna go into my plastic bag with my two copies I have left of my book, Hope's White Shoes. I'm sorry that I don't have any to sell you guys. It was published in 2006 and it's out of print, and it I will say it took me this long to sell or give away all the copies, and now I just have these two, and these in the plastic bag. I try to keep them clean, but they're my reading copies and they're all beat up. Oh, wait a second. Okay, yes, I know why I was going in here. Okay, this is not gonna be obvious, but, you know, I'll do some exposition anyway. So this is a Mr. Rogers poem. And I guess I sort of have to give credit to Mr. Rogers because this poem is basically a rewriting of a song that Mr. Rogers sings on his show. I had it on a record, actually, when I was a kid. It's a song where he teaches you arithmetic, where he's adding numbers. So this poem is called Arithmetic. Flood and flood are goo. Goo and goo are spore. Spore and spore, invertebrate. Mate and mate are lynx fiend. Mate and mate make wolverine, muskrat, slick evening gown sea lion, swan, finch, pegtooth water elephant, hydrophobic primate whose eyes are circles of space, white star wherever sunlight hits. Ape and mate divided by spine plus X plus time times 10 make naked man fur moccasins. Stick and stick are fire. Tree and blade are house. Plant and rock are paint. Paint and paint, nth power. Glass sheets and boats. Half-blind, drip-face, bloodhound DNA. Cave house pictures that zoom and fade. Seatbelt, pacemaker, rocket fuel, grenade. Mini-stellar roadside flare. Flood, goo, tree, spore, fire, lynx, feather, ape, spine. So I went there and read that Mr. Rogers poem because now, after all these years, I have another Mr. Rogers poem. This one is Lady Elaine Fairchild. Endowed by your creator with Lady Elaine Fairchild. Endowed by your creator with wicked rosacea and resting bitch face, you fervently defended irrational causes. Now you hang near the sweaters and shoes of the one who did the make-believing. We know he could have twisted you all into frictionless neighbors who never provoked low rumbling notes on Negri's piano. An entire population truth-serumed by moving fingers, and you got the worst truths. Lady Elaine, have you found peace without your querulous voice? I always thought it was kind of unfair that she was so obviously wrong all the time. It was like he made her awful on purpose. Okay, so here's my last one. I think I've read this one here before too. But spring. When I die, it will be spring. Before dawn, only the dim fluorescent above the stove, the distant burble of birds. I will be alone and calm. We'll survey the fading sky like a farm boy setting off. I say this, knowing well it might be blood and panic. It might be winter, knowing it will not be my choice. Thank you.